It is Thursday, the 27th of March, and this is episode 202 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to another episode. Chris, as ever here, guiding us through with Ian to tell me where I'm going wrong.
Good evening, Christopher.
All right?
I am not too bad, yourself?
Yeah, not too bad.
Now, why couldn't this be episode 200? Because there's lots happened this week.
Lots of stuff been going on, hasn't it? And all kind of meaty, juicy stories that we like to get our teeth into, including a bit of Facebook hate. We all like a bit of Facebook hate, right? Because they have come out this week and from nowhere decided they're going to go and buy Oculus, which is the company behind the Rift.
No!
So all after our chatting last week saying how excited we were by this, all this technology and how it's becoming real, Facebook have stepped in and paid $2 billion in cash and some Facebook shares as well to go and buy the company, basically. And this has caused ripples.
This has caused waves.
Yeah. We yet to see how big a wave, but the Minecraft hippie, what's he called? I can't remember his blooming name, sorry.
You do the story.
At Notch. He's
clearly that's not his name.
No, but it's Marcus Persson. So he was building
what's his name?
He was building Notch. Minecraft for the Oculus, and he's gonna go, no, whoa, man, Facebook creeps me out, dude, so I'm not doing that no more.
He speaks Swedish.
I know, Marcus in his Swedish Persson. Accent. But he's a Swedish hippie. Anyway, so yes, he's pulled Minecraft from it, and I think a lot of other people are sort of a bit dismayed because the idea was this was going to be gaming software, gaming bit of hardware. Now, Facebook have come out and said, we're not going to hold it back on that front. We just want to expand it into these other areas, these big mind-bending areas. I guess they're actually thinking more along what we were talking about at the end of last week's podcast, where, you know, sitting across a desk from someone, so it's like the next level of online meeting, the next level of, you know, they call them adventures. It's pretty sad, really, isn't it? But but yeah, may well give Sony an edge in gamers' minds.
And I think this was a big problem that a lot of people saw Oculus as like this is the first proper, you know, VR technology. It's going to work for the gamer. It's going to be, you know, like that $200-$300 price. Lots of people excited, and also it was a Kickstarter. So it started off, it didn't start off with loads of, you know, venture capitalists putting money in. It was folk like you and me putting in, you know, $300-$400. And so, yes, you did get a development kit to show for it. I mean, some people have actually said, I want a refund, which I think is a bit too far because you bought in and you got a piece of development kit last year, and you could have bought the new development kit this year, which wasn't a Kickstarter. That was a just go in and buy it. So
if you want to get the reap rewards of a company, then set one up and, you know, or become a venture capitalist. That's the way you make your money. But you haven't got enough money to do that. That's why you only put in £200. Become a consortium of venture capitalists if that's what you want to do. But yeah, Kickstarter doesn't mean anything other than you're deciding to pay for something before it's developed because you believe in it.
And we mentioned last week, you know, would Microsoft buy something like this because they seem to be, I'm not saying they're behind, that Sony's got something out there, Oculus have got something out there, Valve had some hardware that the Oculus guys saw and were complimentary about, but they reckoned they were, you know, maybe slightly ahead, and Valve Valve basically said they were doing demo kits. They had no real ambition to launch something, but that could all change because there is something about a company like Facebook. It's a bit like Google. You know, certain people just get turned off by it totally. They just see it as a, you know, I'm not going on Facebook. And I hear it a lot through the Apple podcasts. And I'm saying Apple podcasts, but a lot of the podcasts I listen to are very, very much from kind of Apple community and background. And I do listen to Google ones as well, but there is something about Facebook in particular that does tend
We've
to annoy people.
We've seen less of those big stories recently, though, of the, you know, the privacy worries and whatever. They used to be once a month we used to hear a big thing like that, but that's sort of faded away a little bit. Again, maybe it's people just a bit more jaded by it all.
The last time I heard so much noise, I mean, my Twitter timeline just exploded when this came out. I think The Verge was the first one that I saw posting. And then it was just like, you know, constant people going, no, 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 no.
Well, at the end of the day, it's just, you know, it's a company buying another one, spending an awful lot of money doing it as well. But it's kind of small change for them.
And when you look at the platform that Facebook has, I mean, it is boggling just how much that they serve. You know, traffic-wise, pages-wise, the technology that's there, they can still innovate, you know, pretty quickly. You know, if you look at some of the other big companies that are around, they do move really slowly. You know, your Apples and I mean, Google does still move pretty quickly, and I think they've improved their speed because they've narrowed their focus again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they're probably not going any faster now. They're just a bit more focused in the direction they're going. So yeah.
Yep.
Interestingly, Paul, he came out this week and told me that he's bought one. He's bought a second-hand one off of eBay because they're going cheap at the moment because the second version's all coming out. So I'd be interested to hear what he's got to say about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I am still, I think I said last week, I'm still massively, you know, interested in this. And part of me thinks that they'll actually bring that kind of second experience we talked about. I mean, and we've not really touched much on Notch. So Notch, I think it was 10 grand for the Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And by paying that much, it meant he got a visit. You know, so that was a whole... And it was only 2 weeks ago that he actually decided, right, I'll fly out there and meet the company. And he tried it on and was super excited with the new version of it. And he was, his mind was racing. And he got a fantastic blog post about it. And his mind was racing about how all the technical challenges that they still faced, you know, in software, how would you do this, 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 and this. And Oculus were like, you need to bring Minecraft to this. This would be, you know, awesome. And straight away he was like, actually, I don't know if we can. It's Java-based, you know, it'll have real challenges. But maybe they could do like a mini version or a smaller, more focused one like they did for the Raspberry Pi. Mm-hmm. So they committed to that. And that was a kind of public thing that he kind of within an hour, he'd said, I've pulled that. We're not going to do something. I don't want to work on something for a company like Facebook. He doesn't like their values and he had his reasons. And I think that's fine to a certain extent, but I think the reaction was very much it's a bit like when Facebook bought Instagram, everybody saying, no,
it's an immediate reaction, isn't it? That's what it is, a gut feel. But it doesn't mean it is going to ruin it. In fact, it could well, you know, be the thing it needs to actually go and take on Sony.
Absolutely. Google buying Nest was met with most of the Apple fanboys going, what a disaster, because they were, some of them have so deliberately made sure that Google's not in their lives. Yeah. And this was a disaster because this was an ex-Apple, you know, product designer. It was a fantastic home product and now Google owns it. And it was like, oh, I'm going to have to rip this out. You know, some of them actually did. I just think it's crazy because there is so much good technology out there that if you just narrow your focus that much, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's no good. Okay, let's move on to the next story. So Twitter, they've put photo tagging in basically, or they're going to. And they've also enhanced the feed so you can put multiple photos on a single tweet. Sort of taking Facebook play really there. It's, you know, being able to tag people. I guess it's a nice way of sharing content around. And being able to put four photos in suddenly makes them more of a media platform than just, you know, previous tweets. Also means because you can tag people, it doesn't include that inside your 140 character limit. So therefore... it's kind of moving away from the, you know, because if you want to mention a few people in a tweet, basically that's your whole tweet done. So this gets around that issue by being able to tag people. You can actually have your whole space back.
Yes, and I can see there being, I think this is maybe the first of many changes coming to that kind of basic Twitter philosophy, because they have talked about, as I read an article today, that the retweet might disappear and they're just going to call it share. And just have some simple share options and do away with that whole retweet, which is a real surprise because it is a kind of baked in concept that most people are used to doing for the last, what, you know, 6-7 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's just rebranding, surely. You know, it's the same thing.
Yeah, I think so.
It's the same thing, and in the background it probably worked the same way. But yeah, so this is the direction Twitter's going. Again, I think, you know, it's moving away from what it was at its core, really. So, yeah. I don't see anything wrong with what they're doing here, but I don't think it's massive innovation. But then maybe I'm just a bit short-sighted on that.
I think it's all the kind of social networks are starting to merge in what they do. You know, what one does, one tends to follow. I mean, at one point, Facebook looked to be trying to become Twitter. You know, remember that news stream and that news place? And then...
Kind of integrated hashes more and things like that. So, yeah.
And Google Plus came along and there was a... If you look at them now, because even the big pictures on Twitter and Tweetbot's updated to support them as well, they all feel much of a muchness.
Yeah. Yeah, they all did their kind of profile pages in the same, you know, in the same kind of area. That was in, as soon as they saw one do it, they thought, oh, better do that. Yep.
Yep.
Google Now is coming to the Chrome on desktop, Windows and Mac. So you'll be able to use the power of Google Now. You'll be able to ask it, what does the fox say on your desktop now, rather than just on your mobile phone. Was always going to happen. Has been out in the beta releases for a little while now. And basically that's now getting released to wild.
Yep, I have it. It is there. I can see my Google Now notification, so...
So that means that you get interesting local data based on where you are and what you've been searching for and all sorts of things. So it'll pop up on your desktop, the notifications, just like it does on your mobile phone, basically.
Well, it tells me it's raining and it saves me turning around and looking out the window. It's fantastic.
Do I need an umbrella? The most. Open your curtains. Right. Office. Office is coming to the iPad.
It's came.
it has come. So this is, there are actual free viewers available. So you can actually for free download an application that will allow you to view files as never before. And if you are a Office 365 subscriber, you can also edit your documents. And they... Microsoft said that they've been working very hard to make it a viable product. So touch first, plus a lot of, you know, looking at what makes the desktop enterprise type side of thing work as well. So they're hoping that this has really nailed down the application.
And I mean, this was just announced 2 hours ago. So this is like, you know, just out. And this was the new CEO of Microsoft. So it's Satya Nadella did the presentation, and he handed over to one of his team. And it's even just the words they were using were so different. You know, it was like, you know, the first words that the woman said were like, you know, I want to get Office documents on my iPad.
Yeah,
and it was like, that's somebody from Microsoft talking about their iPad. Yeah.
The words and the quotes that we've got down in our notes just sound Apple. They are.
And this is the official, instead of taking, a lot of the time I'll put notes in from a TechCrunch or GigHome or something, because at least you've had some sort of commentary on it. This is actually just from the Microsoft blog. And it is all very Apple-y. The apps themselves but are very good. So there's the three out. So there's Word, Excel and PowerPoint all tied together via, it's not SkyDrive anymore, it's OneDrive.
Yes, OneDrive, yeah.
And as you said, the only thing I think it's a shame is the subscription. You know, so if you want to, you're basically having to pay $100 a year to edit documents on the go. I've actually fired up two or three quite complex presentations, and they all came through fantastically well with all the transitions in place.
So they may be delivering on their promises then, that's good.
Yeah, and certainly from the people, and I've got no intention of signing up for a subscription to try the editing. So I will trust the reviews that come out over the next few days. But certainly, you know, capability-wise, it looks really good. It's
subscription it's just, model, I think, is the way that everyone's going now. Unfortunately, it's just happening. You no longer own a piece of software at a version. You have to subscribe to keep using.
And I guess there's the interesting bit is, I mean, remember a year ago people said Office is ready, and it never came out. Was this just Ballmer saying there's no way I'm releasing this? You know, because there was all that talk about. You know, we will come to iPad, but not before we come to Surface and not before we come to Windows and all that kind of good stuff.
And maybe they're in that horrible limbo period where they couldn't really strategically do that because they'd be scuppering their own product.
And maybe this is, you know, new vision, new way forward. And
maybe it's certainly different. That's for sure. The tone of the outputs and the what they're talking, you know, about is definitely a different thing. You know, releasing things for free. There we have OneNote last week getting released as free. You know, the movement to getting users rather than getting money.
Well, this is day 52 of Sacha being in charge, and there's no way they've written, you know, office apps in OneNote in that short space of time.
No, but it, you know, like you say, you can put a different focus on it and you can get things pushed to live that weren't due or would be canned or whatever.
It seems to be a different drumbeat over at Microsoft at the moment.
Yep, good. Good for them. I think they need to. UK Telecom's watchdog has come out and said, told us which broadband pay TV providers are not doing too well or weren't doing too well quarter four 2013. And drumroll, please, who came on top?
Sure, it's TalkTalk. It's been TalkTalk forever.
It has been TalkTalk forever because of their tactics. But no, BT have beat them to this.
Wow.
Prestigious award for being the most complained about broadband pay TV provider. And lots of it was around service faults and certainly on the broadband side, service faults and the, you know, how are they dealing with those faults? But on the TV front, it was billing and, you know, things like that that caused them to have 0.31 complaints per 1,000 customers. Which doesn't sound a lot, but apparently that's a lot for the industry compared to the norm.
When you think they've got, 7 or 8 million customers?
Yes, it's a lot of people.
So it is a lot of people. And it's weird. At BT, I continually see people tweeting and talking about they just failed to show up for an appointment. You know, just basic stuff. Not even that they couldn't fix the fault. Just, you know, I've taken the day off work, no show.
Yeah.
2 weeks later, took the day off work, same guy, no show. And it's like, that's really poor.
Yeah, I've certainly heard people moaning about, you know, subscribing to their TV service and then not getting it on their TV and all sorts of weird stuff. Sky TV, as a comparison, 0.02 complaints per 1,000 customers. So that is a massive difference. I mean, and that's an incredible service from Sky, really. That's pretty clever, considering how much they charge. to have no complaints is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Because they're by far the most expensive, and there is things that go wrong with them.
Sure, they obviously deal with it well.
Yeah,
good for them. HTC have released their new One model. This is called the One M8, or if you're Australia, it's One Mate. they're updated One model. Now the HTC One, the last model, was universally critically acclaimed. People loved it. The reviewers loved it. They said it was an amazing phone, probably the best Android out there. People didn't buy it. Such a shame. And this time round, they're saying this one is even better. So it is massive. I mean, it's.
It is as big as your face.
5.76 inches tall. They reckon the screen's unbelievably good. 1080p full high def.
So last year, one of the guys at work has one. Last year's was 4.7, so it's now moved to a 5-inch screen.
Yes. So it's ginormous. as they say, the power button you never get to actually reach because you'd have to actually physically move your second hand.
I've got a shortcut. You can double tap the glass instead.
Got rid of that because they figured that people wouldn't reach it there. The reviews are saying it's not as sharp and angular as the last one, and actually it makes it feel better in the hand, although it is big and heavy. So you don't expect this thing to be invisible. They've added their own sense UI. This is the sixth sense, literally. That's what they've called it. This does radically alter the kind of underlying Android interface. Yet again, people are saying actually it's no worse. I mean, most over, you know, interfaces that get put over the top are actually worse. This one's saying it's not really any worse, so you're not losing out by having it. Biggest weak point being it's the phone's camera.
Yeah, and the last one, the camera, and the camera's not changed since the last one. As I said, the chap at work, he was just saying it sucks. So yeah. He's really disappointed with the pictures he can take, you know, and it's nothing to do with it's only in darkness or only outside, just universally he's not been able to get good pictures.
And it's easy to poo-poo that and just say, oh, it's such a minor thing, but actually nowadays it's a massive thing.
It's a massive thing. I mean, it's one of the things that almost universally every Android phone that come out, they try and say, can it compete with iPhone? Because Apple seem to have locked in on, you know, if we can always be, you know, the best or the second best, because there's always that, you know, talk of the Nokia ones with the 40 megapixels and stuff, but it was always, there's always been a kind of general, you know, whatever they do, whether it's software or it's just execution, there's just something about it.
It's one area I do believe that Apple actually spend the time to create their own custom lenses and stuff like that, whereas other people, I think, do buy them off the shelf. I don't think they go to the engineering, you know, depth that Apple go, but that's why Apple takes so long to get new products out there. There you go. Tax changes are set to hit music and ebook downloads. So these are changes to UK law saying that, well, they're trying to close down the loopholes that say tax is paid at the point of purchase, or they want it to be at the point of consumption rather than the point of purchase, which moves things like book purchases, which happen in Luxembourg, which has a low rate of VAT. So it removes their low rate and puts them into UK VAT, which would be 20%, which would be make quite a considerable difference.
Yeah. So what people are guessing is at the turn of the year, we might see some, and I guess that people are thinking, you know, the kind of standard price we pay for books might, you know, subtly alter, or, you know, that app price that we used to pay of like 69p or whatever, it might become, you know, 75 or 79. You know,
it's percentage terms, it's massive, you know.
Yes.
And the government is saying it's going to raise them £300 million in the first year, and you know that's great for the government, but what it means is we're just paying £300 million more for products and services, which isn't great for the consumer.
No, and one of the things I talked about was that in some of the tax changes, I think it was, I can't remember if it was the apps or ebooks. I think it's ebooks, that some of them are so small. Because they're all, it was like, you know, instead of being, you know, 15% of the currently charged, it might go to 20, or instead of being, you know, 17, it goes to 20. That it might just be companies try and absorb that.
Yeah, they will, up to a certain point, they probably will, but
they do. Because I remember from friends in Spain when the euro came in, then they said at first they were trying to absorb it, but ultimately, you know, 6 months later, the price went up.
No, exactly. They've got, you know, they'll absorb it to get rid of that first initial negative reaction, and then that's it. They can't do that forever.
No.
Game developers are going to get a cash boost. This has been talked about for ages now. So this were government applied to European Commission to say, we want to be able to give our games industry support because they're suffering out there. Then the European Commission came back and said, oh, we don't think they're suffering that badly. And now they come back and actually, now that they've seen probably, three, four, five massive development houses fold, they've kind of said, okay, so horse bolted. Effectively, we're coming into good times again now. So maybe they don't need it anymore, but say the problem is that they weren't able to react quick enough. And anyway, the money's coming, but it's too late for the guys that have already gone.
And as you say, some of the companies that went weren't you know, like, you know, 20 people, you know, studios. No. They were massive studios that. Oh.
It's always been the case that development studios can fall down over one game. But these were development studios falling because a game didn't, you know, it sold well. It just didn't sell spectacularly well, which no, you know, games won't all the time.
No.
So yeah. There you go. So there is extra money, but unfortunately it's too late. But they do reckon that will safeguard about 4,500 odd jobs, which is good news. Xbox One, they are changing some of their procedures, and they will now start warning users if people act like jerks online, basically. Sounds like a positive thing, maybe, if they listen.
Yeah. I don't know about this. I really don't, because they have had reputation for a while.
Ever since Xbox was basically live, basically.
And I remember at first, cause I think you started off with 3 stars, wouldn't it? And you needed like 5 or 6 friends, and it jumped to 5 stars, and it never seemed to then change.
Now you could always go and have a look if someone, like, you could see that over your whole entire lifetime, this many people have made a bad report, but they didn't say what it was, or, you know.
And it was percents. So it was, because I remember the one that was always crazy for me was, like, you know, 40% of people that have rated you have said that you left early. It's like, I've never left a game early. It was one of my things that I will always wait, even if I'm getting pumped in Halo, I will stay at the bitter end. And it just shows you people are just saying, ah, well, put that in.
Yeah.
You know, just bad rating. And I think that's the fear, that, you know, if you've got a group of, you know, if you're in a particular room and you get 8-10 people constantly doing it, you know, constantly, you know, would it affect your bad behavior? Because what they're saying is, it's not just a, it's not just going to be an online kind of setting, but they actually might then start to take away privileges. Like, actually, you can't run Twitch because you've got bad behavior against your name.
It feels a bit teach a child, doesn't it? But then again, some of the people are pretty childlike. So absolutely. Some of them and are children.
Some of them are children. And also some of the adults are some of the worst.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know? So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. I actually read Titanfall. Did you read about what they're doing with cheats?
No.
So this is on the kind of PC side of things. And you know how they still have the problem with aimbots and people buying different aimbots from people. So what they're doing is they're putting all the cheats in the same room, so that basically you are up against other people who have got aimbots as well. And even in the little fact, they say, I hope you bought a good one. Because you're going to be up against people who might have paid more for a better aimbot than you. Which
yeah,
I thought...
That's clever, nice. Clever answer. Yeah.
Yeah.
They've also said that there's going to be safeguards in there to stop you being griefed. So that's where people, submitting reports that are inaccurate. And it's also not going to be a short-termist thing. It's going to take the long-term view. So you've got to be a jerk for a while before they'll start taking away privileges. But yeah, it can of worms, I think they've opened with it.
But how would you feel if you turned on, just say we finished tonight and you think, yeah, let's go and play Titanfall, and you switch it on and your profile says, needs work?
I would feel angry.
Or avoid me. And that's the thing, because you can start to drop. And what they're saying is that if you get dropped into these zones, it can affect who you can actually then start to team up with and play with.
Yeah, so they're like, they avoid me if you get to that point, which they said they will warn you before you can drop into that point. But if you do drop into that point, then yes, your matchmaking will own, a bit like the aimbots, I'm sure, you'll only be able to join up with other people who are in that avoid me category.
And I think they've already said that if you do drop in, if you're in the UK and you drop into that avoid me, you're basically teamed up with everybody in France. They are the worst. I know that's a kind of racial stereotype, but you'll be sitting in FIFA and you'll be doing the kind of five versus five in a team, and you'll get somebody going, parlez-vous français? Parlez-vous français? And there's silence. Parlez-vous français? And you're sitting in the middle of the room. Parlez-vous français? And you're like, fuck it off. Go and make some onion soup. it's just...
I think we better pull this back to our podcast. We said last week that we both bought Chromecast. And we did. And it arrived. And we've been casting. So I don't know what your experience was like. My experience was that... So I plugged in my Chromecast. And the first thing I had a problem with, or I had a problem because I've got two wireless networks and it didn't like one of them. So I tried originally connecting it to one of my wireless networks. It didn't like that one, so I had to go to another one. Whether it was just protocol or the kind of particular band it was on, I'm not sure. But anyway, as soon as I attached it to the second wireless network, it was all fine. And I've since happily been chucking YouTube videos, Netflix, I streamed a TV stream. I'm going to keep it vague. via the kind of desktop option you've got. So where it doesn't have an integrated service, you can stream whatever's in your browser to your TV, and that worked okay. Actually, I was quite surprised that was fine. It's been pretty easy, and all the applications have a little icon in them now, which basically says, where do you want to display this? So as soon as you've got a Chromecast and you log into YouTube, there's a little icon which you click on and say, send it to my TV, and that's all you need to do. It's done.
I'm pretty much the same. I plugged mine in, and I guess when I think about it, you think, fair enough. The first thing I was surprised at was I plugged it in, set it up, and it was all fine. And then you're like, well, now what?
Yeah, exactly. It's true. It's like, oh, yeah. Okay.
So,
oh, yeah.
And it did an update, so I'm sure you did the same. Yeah. So plugged it in, and it says, yeah, you update. Update went fine. It was displaying a pretty picture. And I think I just fired up the YouTube app on the iPad and just started, watching videos.
Random videos, because you had it there. And I guess it's one of those things that now it's there, it just sits there waiting for the time you actually need to use
it.
Exactly. It's not necessarily something like so exciting that you just, need to use it straight away. But now it is there. It's a nice, easy way of, say, getting content onto your TV.
And it's only, I think it was only a few weeks ago, because I think they'd partnered with people before. So I'm looking at my, and Chris has already slagged me off with this because I do have a mind map, which I know is terribly geeky, but there you go. You have a mind map to remind me what I'm going to be talking about with this. And it's got things like, you know, Vivo and Plex and iPlayer. And you've already mentioned Netflix as Google Play Music. So you can, you know, select all these things and throw them up there. But it's actually not that many apps. I thought there would have been a lot more. But there is kind of ones tucked away. Like, I mean, Google brought one out themselves this week called PhotoWall, which allows you in a group environment to start throwing up photos and viewing them on screen. And there's other ones in there like, CastPad. And MyCast Screen, which aren't well known. MyCast Screen almost gives you like a RSS feed, weather, you know, photos and stuff. And it's almost like a kind of, if you had a TV, you know, running in your office or in your, you know, wherever, you can have that running with some information scrolling by, etc. And the CastPad was a bit of a, gives you a whiteboard, you know, and people can collaborate to start doodling and you can do sort of things with it. So there's things like that, but it feels early days. It feels... Yeah. It feels like there's more to come.
There's a difference in, I guess it's the mode of operation on this device as well, which is unusual in that normally when you plug in, say, an Apple TV or, any other kind of Roku box, something along those lines, you'll get a nice interface, which you use then a remote control to sort of, oh, I'm going to go into this YouTube app and I'm going to specifically go there. But that's not how this works. You use your existing devices to go somewhere where you've already been before, so like iPlayer or whatever, and you press a little button that's integrated into that service. So it doesn't feel like when you first turn this thing on, oh, it's just, you know, it really is just a receptacle waiting for you to do something on your own device. And that's a difference of, there's a psychological difference there that, you know, you're not going somewhere new, you're going to the YouTube you already knew, you're just pushing it out to, you know.
And I found that as well, and I think maybe where I'm guilty is that AirPlay works like that, and I had the same issues when I first tried AirPlay. So I'm like, what's so good about this? Because I could just view it on my iPad sitting here.
Yeah, exactly. I'm already on my iPad, so why not, you know? But actually, if you're in a room with a load of people and you want to push them for the hour,
exactly,
it suddenly makes more sense. I don't have friends.
I don't have a room. No. I tried Plex. Plex worked well, although I did feel like it was dropping frames. And I don't know if that's just because I'm on Wi-Fi and I'm streaming some MKVs that are, you know, all, you know, Blu-ray encodes, and it's maybe just like I've always went wired with that kind of stuff. And when it's wired, it works fine.
Yeah.
And Wi-Fi always is, you know, because you don't know what else is on your network. Because usually I've got my iPad and I've got a Mac and I'm doing other things on the network, and it's always wired just kind of guarantees it, and wireless doesn't. So I need to experiment a bit more with that. I still had a crazy, I want this for my, when I'm away and I'm in a hotel and I can plug in content.
And I'm still interested to see how it's going to work. And I'm going away to a hotel next week, so I will take it with me and see what, how I get on. You know, is it viable in that kind of scenario, basically?
And somebody pointed out to me, because I was like, you know, because it's, you know, TV's bigger, and they're like, yeah, but it's bigger, but if you're lying on a bed in a Premier Inn and it's a 19-inch TV, your iPad's bigger because it's like a foot away.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's like, yeah, it's a fair point.
So it's, I'm £30 though, it's still a killer price point. And who, you know, I'm very glad I've got it. I just, you know, it just, there was definitely a feeling of, oh, I'm waiting to use it now rather than needing to get in there and really desperately.
No, absolutely. And your analogy of the Apple TV is exactly right, because with Plex, you know, it was like I'm browsing the Plex content on my iPad to then say, go and get it. Whereas with the
Chromecast.
No, with the Apple TV. I'm obviously getting tired. But with the Apple TV, it was more of a, you know, browse, play.
Yeah.
And it just felt different. And we'll see next week, because the April 2nd, it looks like this is Amazon's TV box you know, is going to be announced. And I still think there's obviously another play going to come from Apple. And this is probably what Google's second or third go at this kind of stuff, because they had the Chrome TVs.
They got banned initially, didn't they, with their kind of initial ideas, because it was putting web content onto your TV, which was too mind-blowing for producers and content owners. So I think they've now come around a little bit.
Absolutely. And £30, as I said. And it's like the amount of folk at work that have actually already had one, because they bought one in import, or they got one from, you know, eBay or whatever. It's just in that sweet zone. It's a no-brainer. Especially Netflix. You know, you can spend 430 on a on the Xbox One and use it for Netflix, or you can spend £30.
Yeah, that's... Shut up. That's the end of the podcast and of my morale. If you want to find out more about what we do and what we talk about, you can digitaloutbox.com. You can talk to us, info@digitaloutbox.com, or Twitter, Skype, Digital Outbox. I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK. Ian, where are you?
My blog is iand.net. I am on Twitter as Sweeper.
Wunderbar. And we will speak to you next week at some point, hopefully.
Maybe.
It's a bit tight next week, but we'll try.
Maybe.
Maybe. So, yeah, there may be one next week or there may be not. We'll see. Is that?
Super vague. It sounds like a Microsoft release strategy for Office. We might release it this year or we might not.
Bye-bye.
Ta-da. Wow, you can't print from Office an iPad.
Do I want to?